This is an ABC podcast.
Roots and Shoots on ABC Radio Perth and WA and the ABC Listen app.
Hello, Roots and Shoots today comes to you from Saturday Breakfast, and we've got Mark Tuchek in the studio, and I have to tell you, he has brought in the most beautiful array of plants, and we're going to have him on in just a second. Mark, I might need you to move to another microphone, just over to that side, because I want to hear everything you have to say. And to tell people to get their questions in, and you can call us on 1300 222 720 or you can text us on 0437 922 720. Welcome again to Roots and Shoots. Good to see you.
Thank you for having me.
You have brought in this gorgeous array of plants. What was on your mind when you were selecting them?
Well, funny enough, there was a plant there. I was thinking of amber at the time when I was picking it out, and it's actually called court jester, but that's not the main reason I was picking. I was going to say it's actually a very pretty plant, but there's a lot going on. That's the coloured one. It's behind the chair there with the coloured leaves. Yeah.
And oh, I see. It's a variegated leaf, isn't
correct.
It?
Correct. It's got variegated.
So it's very pretty. It's got red around the edges of some, yellow and others, and then in the central area it's got sort of two types of green, a dark and a light. It's gorgeous.
There's a lot going on there.
I thought
of amber, and it's a really interesting plant. It's called Hutiana is the botanical name, and the leaves actually even smell a bit like orange peels. So if you kind of rub and smell the leaves, they smell a bit orange peel like.
And oh, yes, they do, and it's delightful.
Yeah, there you go.
Now, you've got pond plants there. Is that right?
That's right. So that one is a pond plant, so you can put it in and around your pond, any water feature that you've got. It likes having wet roots, especially during the warm growing season. But it's a very attractive variegated leaf plant, low growing, has a little white flower too as a bonus, but it's grown money for its leaves. And delightful thing to have, and in the local garden centres at the moment too. So it's just available now.
The one that caught my eye is the white Kunzea.
Yes.
Kunzea. So I'm aware from a local firm that does bush teas.
Yes.
That Kunzea is a herb that helps with inflammation.
That's right. Very good. Yeah.
Yeah. So I could grow this in my garden.
Very easy to grow. It's actually in Eastern States, Kunzea. There are kind of local ones. But this is Kunzea ambigua. And as you can see, the amount of white flowers that it produces is just fantastic. And it's a great pollinating plant. It attracts little painted butterflies to your garden, and they just love it. And you can make a tea out of the honey flowers, but you can also make tea out of the dried leaves as well.
Okay, that's what I'd be interested in doing, particularly if it's for inflammation. How big does this, like, it's got a sort of, it looks like a sharp-edged green sort of sword, but in fact, that's probably not. How would you describe it?
No, it's a very soft leaf plant.
You touch it, it's soft.
The leaves are very small, and this one is a prostrate version, so it doesn't get as big, so it'll grow to about a metre high, maybe 2 metres wide, as a plant.
And then it has these gorgeous little white, tiny little flowers on. They are superb.
And they're just full of nectar. And like I said, you can make tea out of it. You actually, when it starts to flower, you can actually smell the honey when you walk past it. So it's a really interesting plant in the Tuckerbush range. And of course, you can make tea out of it. That is very, very beneficial for you. So there you go.
Let's go to a couple of calls, and we're going to start with Kieran from Scarborough. Morning, Kieran.
Good morning, Geraldine, and good morning, Mark, and how are you?
Very well, Kieran. And,
that's great, and I'm just trying to beat the rain down here at Greenbushes. It's been raining since about 4 o'clock this morning, and I must say it's bucketing down. And so hopefully in Perth it'll be okay for our open garden today, which is at number 8 Martin Avenue in Netherlands. And this garden is done as a designer's garden, a designer by the name of Sue Lefroy. who runs a landscape design business, and this is probably one of the first gardens that we've had, which is actually designed by a designer.
I saw the photos, Kieran. They were very impressive, very impressive.
Yeah, Mark, it's good to have a few designer gardens because what we're trying to do is promote, besides landscape design, but give people an idea of what they can actually do with their house and garden at the same time. So if you're building a house or you've got a house, if you can get your garden design in at the same time, it certainly goes hand in glove.
That's right, because most people tend to leave the garden side to the very end, don't they, when they've spent all their money usually. But if people think about it from the beginning, it's amazing what you can achieve in a garden like this.
Oh, most certainly, Mark. And hard landscaping is one of those parts of the garden that not everyone can do. It's quite easy to go out and plant your gardens, but sometimes you do have to get contractors in to do all the hard landscape. But you certainly appreciate it once it's there because it's there for almost a lifetime, though gardeners do like changing things around. Your plants are fairly easy to change around, but you know it's a bit harder to change a wall or brick paving at times. So
yes,
it's great to get it right at the first time.
That made me laugh when you say gardeners like changing things around. And I remember early on working with Sabrina, and she'd be like, "Oh no, I'm taking this out. Don't like that anymore." And I kind of had this mindset about, you know, once it's in, it's kind of fixed. And now I understand that. Now I do move things around, and I feel much less guilty about it.
Oh, yes. And there's so many kind of new and interesting plants becoming available that so you need to find a spot for it. So sometimes you need to be ruthless and take some plants out to put some new things in.
Thanks very much for your call, Kieran. We'll move on. There is a text here. "Hi, I have a dragon tree that nearly fell over. I pushed it back, but a stem broke in the process. Do I do anything to the scar?" And I'm going to just bring up the picture there.
Oh, okay. So dragon trees are they're a form of Dracaena Draco, and unfortunately those type of trees don't heal wounds like a gum tree would or a bottle brush would. So that scar is going to be it's not going to actually heal over. You could probably clean it up a little bit by just getting a little saw and just clean up the edges, but unfortunately it's not going to callus over or heal, so nothing to do with that one, unfortunately.
Can I add in something of my own? I have a small wattle tree that was planted before I got to my house, and it's about yay high, and it's really bent.
Okay.
And it's gorgeous. I mean, the blossom on it in spring is just fantastic. Is it possible to, you know, stand it up? And that picture that we just saw, for people who didn't have the advantage of seeing it, there were some sort of soft looking ties that were drawing it back. Is that the thing to do?
Yes, you can do that. So the best way to stake a plant is to put stakes either side. You know, most people make the mistake of putting a stake along the stem.
Yep.
And if you put a stake either side of the plant, and then you can put some old stocking in between in a figure of eight pattern to leave it flexible enough to actually move, but then supported enough to actually control the plant and to get it a bit more stable. So dragon trees are very heavy, so that's going to be a bit of a job getting that more upright because of the weight in the trunk of those plants.
Okay. We've got a question about geraniums from Michelle in Rockingham, and she said, "Do you know what is happening to these geraniums?" I'm going to try and can't enlarge that, but it looks like it's got some sort of red dot on the back of the geranium.
Okay, so that is rust. So it's got rust, geranium rust, and rust is a fungal disease that takes over plants that are possibly a little bit too wet. So if the air circulation isn't good, if it's not getting enough sun, if it's staying a bit moist at night, those are the conditions for these kind of fungal conditions to proliferate. And rust has those little rusty spores on the undersides of the leaves. So there are specific fungal sprays, copper-based sprays you can use. I would probably pick off those really the worst affected leaves, okay, and remove them entirely. And but then you need to do something else to help the plant recover. So either increase the sunlight, increase the air circulation or stop water over watering it, and especially over the leaves at night.
You're with Mark Tuchek and Geraldine Mellett on Roots and Shoots, and you can call us on 1300 222 720. And I almost never say this, but if you call now, you will get through. So jump on those phones, or you can text us on 0437 922 720. Somebody asked what was the name of the plant that we were just talking about with the white flowers.
So it's Kunzea, or it's called white Kunzea, is its common name, or Kunzea ambigua prostrate is the botanical name.
And it gets to about a metre, you said?
Yeah, about a metre high and 2 metres wide. So this one spreads a bit wider. There is a taller version of the same thing.
Absolutely stunning. Let's talk to AJ from Woodlands. Hi, AJ. Hello, AJ, are you there?
Yes, thank you, Geraldine, and hello, Mark. I've got a question for my daughter. She lives in Parkwood. She has three beautiful passion fruit vines growing along her pool edge and just on the wall, and they are really vigorous, and the flowers are huge, but they never turn into passion fruit. They just drop off. What is she doing wrong, please?
Oh, this is, it's, she's probably not doing anything wrong at the moment. So this is occurring presently, or
has
it been going as an ongoing thing?
Yes, just, well, this year the flowers are really huge, but they don't do anything, and the plants are very strong.
Yes, it really comes down to the nighttime temperature and a pollination of bees, of course, and things like that. So there's probably really nothing that she can do unless she wants to make a sacrifice at midnight to the plant gods. But we kind of, you know, avoid doing that nowadays. But, yeah, so really I would just leave and for the time being, and you would not believe, you know, nature will sort itself out. It will get warmer. It'll get more humid, the bees will be more active, and those flowers will get pollinated, and you will have passion fruit.
Okay. Okay. I'm looking forward to that. Thank you, Mark.
Thanks, AJ.
Thank you.
Good to talk to you. Years ago, I asked Sabrina what I should put in before I planted my passion fruit, and she said a liver, because they're gross feeders. Anyway, I misheard her, and I came back, it was like a year later, and said, my passion fruit is amazing. I put in the liver and the loaf of bread, and she said, why did you put in a loaf of bread, like we're making sandwiches or something? But then she thought about it and she said, I think actually it's probably good, because the loaf of bread would break down as well and provide some extra,
It'd be good at attracting, you know, beneficial microorganisms in order to release nutrients into the soil. So any kind of organic matter, whether it be bread, livers, compost, all that kind of stuff is good, you know. So the more you do, the better it. And they are gross feeders. So passion fruit do need regular fertilising, but if hers is healthy enough, I wouldn't be bothered fertilising it with anything extra. So.
We had a question from Rebecca who said, can I use this as mulch? And she sent a photo and it's of a ground cover. And she and I'm wondering, I'm not sure, is it Dichondra repens? So instead of mulching, she's saying, can I use this to, you know, take the place of mulch?
Oh, listen, I can't. It's not Dichondra repens. It's a very, it almost looks a bit like a type of Myoporum, but it's very compact too. So great ground cover, whatever it is. I'd have to blow it up and see it a bit closer. But yes, there's different ways you can mulch your garden. So you can mulch it with hard materials, organic materials, and also you can mulch with living ground covers, and that's a very good way to go too.
That's so clever, isn't it?
It makes perfect sense. So if you've got, you know, a nice thick mulch and then you cover that with a ground cover, you know, you're basically eliminating weeds, you're protecting the ground, you're encouraging microorganisms. So it's a good way to have a living ground cover as a mulch too. So.
With natives, if you're doing all of that but needing to get them water, are you then best reticulating with a kind of drip irrigation system?
Yeah, we think drip reticulation is better. So because really sprinklers, you know, you run the gauntlet of, you know, if you're reticulating your garden, the wind blows half of it away. A lot of it's evaporated off very quickly. And sometimes you're watering areas that aren't necessarily needing water. You know, you can water areas that are, promote weed growth. But with drip or subsurface irrigation, you know, the water's actually getting down exactly to where the root zone are. And as the plant, grows, you know, you might need to increase drippers within that drip line. But it's a more effective way. You leave your sprinklers on a bit longer because it takes longer to form that area. But you're not wasting water as much through sprinklers.
Mm. And then if you have got mulch and ground covers or whatever on the surface, you're not landing it on mulch that might not allow it to really get through.
That's right. Mm. So, yeah, good mulch will always, you know, allow water to get through. Rather than those mulches that pack down. So,
Coming up to 21 minutes after 9 on Roots and Shoots with Chris, with Mark Tuchek, and we're going to Chris from Kareen. Hello, Chris. Are you there, Chris? Let's see. Hi, Chris.
Yes.
Hello, Chris.
Hello. Question in a few parts. I've got a 15-metre row of gazanias performing a bit of a mulching ground cover role, and I love the look of them, and they're nice and hardy, as you'll know, but I've come to the understanding that they are an environmental weed, and maybe I should get rid of them from my urban environment. I'm asking if you agree with that idea that in an urban environment that they are a weed, and for maybe plantings in the coming winter, what I could replace them with.
Okay, so the gazania is a very bad bushland weed, and it's declared. There are some varieties, having said that, there are some varieties of gazania that are sterile, so they're only propagated by cuttings, but the majority of gazanias are seed propagated and things like that. And, yeah, they've just become a weed. Even in urban areas, they become a weed too, through seeds, through birds and things like that. So there are so many more ground covers that would do the job of a gazania to choose from. And, you know, local garden centres are filled with them at the moment.
What would be some of your suggestions?
I kind of like there's things like there's a plant called Bubiello. I mentioned Myoporum before. Mm. There's different varieties of Myoporum. Myoporum insular prostrate is called Bubiello, and that's a very hardy ground cover, spreads to about 2 metres. A lot of people are starting to put them on verges, you know, because they don't, once they're established, they don't need a lot of attention. And it won't give you the flowering that a gazania would, but it's still very pretty. There's some prostrate acacias, Acacia saligna prostrate, very thick as well. And there are even some dark leaf myoporums. So there's Myoporum parvifolium purpurea. So it's got purple foliage. And that's a standout because it has the white flowers. So the white flowers against the purple foliage.
That sounds gorgeous. What was that one again?
Myoporum, I don't know its common name. So Myoporum parvifolium.
Parvifolium.
Purpurea.
Purpurea.
Yeah.
You really have to know your Latin when you're a gardener, don't you?
Yes, they drilled that into us a long time ago, back in the days.
Thanks very much for your call, Chris. Let's go to Ian from Westminster. Hello, Ian.
Oh, good morning. And your name's...
You're talking to Mark Tuchek.
Yeah, I know Mark. What was your name?
I'm Geraldine Mellett.
Oh, Geraldine, okay. Mark, on the strawberries, I'm having no end of problems with them. Even into the garden centres, the distributors are bringing them in. I was told, oh, look, you've got a fungus there. It's already on the plants that are coming from the distributors. But anyway, I don't want to deal with the fungus. I wanted more into growing them. Can you give me some hints, soil preparation in pots and gardens, whether they like lots of sheep manure, because they don't seem to like our sandy soil.
No, that's right. And they are gross feeders. I'd be very surprised if the growers were releasing diseased plants into the marketplace because
the fungus is on the leaves in the garden centres.
Oh, okay.
See, she pointed out to me. She said, "You've got a fungus," because I brought one in, and she said, "You've got a fungus. You'll have to spray." Then when I look in the aisles and that, where there was a lot of strawberry plants at various sizes. And I said, "But look at them there. The fungus is already in the leaves."
Yeah.
And she said, "Oh, yes, they are, aren't they?"
No, it could be the way the leaves are, but strawberries are fairly easy to grow. So if you do you want to grow yours in the ground, then if your soil's not good, or in pots?
I've got them in pots and in garden, but the ones that are coming out of, say, when you buy them from Woolies or somewhere, they're big. They're the size of a 20-cent coin, and mine are not. Mine are small. Some have made it all right, but what I'd like to know is what sort of soil preparation should I, knowing that we've got this sandy soil, lots of sheep manure, they'd respond to that, I guess, would they?
Yes, they would, yeah. And I wouldn't just use sheep manure by itself. I'd use a compost, organic compost in there as well. And what you need to do, though, is once you've done all that, you need to put a like a light mulch, because you don't want to have the strawberries in contact with the soil. And also, when they're on the ground, little slaters get hold of them as well. So then if you then pack, you can get like a straw type or lucerne type mulch to pack around the strawberries. Or you can put them in pots, and in a pot, just use a good quality Australian premium potting mix. And that way, if you get them in a large pot, the strawberries can just hang over the edge and they'll be clean and free. But full sun for them. Don't water them at night. Water them in the morning. And they should be relatively, you know, pest-free.
Good luck with that, Ian. Let's go to Dal Yellup now, and we're talking with Joe. Hello, Joe.
Hi, Joe. Oh, hello. Sorry. Hi, Mark. Sorry about that. Yeah, look, I've sent a photo through. I've just got some cycads, and they've just got the, I think they're called pups, the younger ones underneath. And we've cut them back, all the foliage, but we're just wondering about when to remove them. And is it safe to do so now? Because we've just, over the last 2 days, they've just developed new growth on them since we've cut them back.
Okay, so that those cycads, when those leaves come out very quickly. You know, you'd be, yeah, you know, one day you're looking at them, there's nothing happening, and all of a sudden there's got leaves on them. But those little pups down the side, what you need to do is dig down and remove some of the soil and see if you can actually physically see any roots emerging from that particular pup. Sometimes you can make a slight incision, and that spurs them on to actually form roots from that particular pup. They'll be quite spiky too, so you're going to need gloves while you're doing that, because they won't be easy to handle. But that's the first thing you want to do. You want to see some little white roots actually developing from the sides of those, from the trunk.
Okay, so would it be, if we did that over the weekend, would it be safe to remove them even with that new growth on them, or do we have to wait?
It is, as long as you keep them damp and moist, and don't let it dry out, because those new leaves are very soft and very prone to, you know, drying out. So make sure you keep it damp at all times, and it should be okay.
Thanks very much for your call, Joe. We'll go to one more, and then we're going to go to a package that talks about natives that blend in with kind of traditional cottage-style English gardens. And we're talking to Carmel from Spencer's Brook. Hi, Carmel.
Oh, hi. How are you today?
Great.
Now, I'm a serial plant killer, and I've managed to get...
And you're not in jail yet?
No. I could be fairly shortly if you have a look-see at the pictures of the grapevine that I've sent through. This plant's finally decided that it's going to take off a little bit, and I've got some retic in, and I've got some mulch over the top, and I'm also fertilising it with a very old-school branded fertiliser that we used to put water with, but this one looks like it's in pellets with blood and bone mixed through. Help?
Oh, gosh, it looked pretty healthy to me. Is there something wrong with it?
I'm getting a lot of white flecks on the leaves, and there's one or two leaves that are folding over and drooping, and now they've started to burn off, but I'm not, it's not getting any, it's not getting any water on the leaves or anything, and the veins are starting to go a little bit yellowish and around the edges of the leaf.
Did you send more than one photo, or was it just the one photo?
Because the one photo we saw, it looks absolutely fine. It's near a sort of a wooden bucket.
Yeah. So there was one, that's the larger one. There's two others that have just got the leaf.
Okay. We've only got the one photo here. Oh, yeah. Yep.
Right.
Can see a bit of that edge that's curled over and a bit manky.
Oh, it's not too bad. Yeah. Is it in full sun there, or is it in the shade?
It gets full sun from about 9 a.m. through to about 2 p.m., and then it goes into the shade. It's actually right next to my veranda. I'm hoping that it's going to grow up and provide me shade.
I think it'll be okay. I think if you look at the new leaves that have come out, it's probably got stressed at some point and just burnt those edges of those leaves. But the new growth looks quite okay to me. So I'd say it's probably just had a bit of a hiccup, and I think it'll be okay.
Oh, good.
There you go. You're not in
killing jail this week.
No garden jail for you. Thank you very much, Carmel. It's coming up to 28 minutes to 10 on Roots and Shoots with Mark Tuchek. Just a little pause here, because I want to ask you if you ever travelled around Australia with your family as a kid and how it shaped who you are today. Because for Xantharia horticulturalist Matt Barrett, not only did it instill a lifelong love for nature, it also made him realise how incredible our endemic species are to grow in such underwhelming soil. And he knows that cottage style or lush English gardens are still popular, but with our warming climate, are there any natives that will blend in with the lavender and the pansies and the roses and the azaleas? And the answer is yes, and Mark is nodding along. Christine Layton went out to ask Matt to start with some ground covers that might suit.
I am a huge fan of Dampiera. They're really good for shadier spots. There's a lot of different types. They've got these adorable little purple flowers. They're really, really cute. I also, for sunnier spots, really like Chrysocephalum. They're these yellow, everlasting-looking flowers. They flower all year. The longest I've seen them without flowers is 2 weeks. They're constantly flowering and they just grow in full sun.
So we've got ground covers. Where would you go next?
Pimelias are a great one. They are just naturally like this little ball shape, and you can get white, pale pink, deep pink. There's actually quite a few different species of them as well. I really like Pimelia pharyngina, or Ferenginia, however you want to pronounce it. That's a Perth local one, and that just grows in straight sand, full sun. It's a beautiful plant.
I've got the Spavolans, I've got that from Kings Park, and I've got the Marshmallow.
Yes.
And the Marshmallow, is that local?
It is, yeah. That one's more of a shade lover. I typically see them more in canopies, like under canopies. But, yeah, they have a really big flower, and they're beautiful. That's kind of very cottagey, but also bordering on fairy garden with them.
Some of the bigger plants, the big red gets very big, yes. Doesn't it? That's a. Would you say that would blend in a cottage garden? What would you say for the big plants?
Yeah, well, kangaroo balls in general will work, absolutely. Any of the Anagazanthus flavidus, they're the taller kangaroo paws. So if you wanted a big, colourful show, they'd be fantastic. As far as, like, shrubbier things, I mean, a lot of acacias do really well in a cottage garden. You get, you know, winter and spring flowering from a lot of them.
Which of the acacias are more flower, less branch?
More flower, less branch. Acacia drummondii is quite showy. That one's quite nice because the leaves are very unique. It almost looks like a fern.
The clay wattle?
That one is one of my favourite plants. I love clay wattles. The Glaucoptera. Yeah, that would be fantastic in a cottage garden. And they're so drought tolerant. I love them so much. I got two. They're amazing.
Can you put them in full sun?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And we've just missed the flowering period for them, haven't we?
Yeah, they've finished now. They typically, you can get them starting in like late winter, but typically going into spring, that's when you'd see them the most.
And the leaves are so cool.
So cool.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good one. How about some outliers? What would you hide in a cottage garden and not even know it's a native?
Ooh. There's actually a hakea called Burrandong Beauty, which is sort of like a small to medium shrub, and it just gets these big pink cluster flowers all the way up the stem. It is absolutely gorgeous. That's a winter flowering one. It can be prostrate. It actually depends how you clip it, but you can kind of make it grow a bit wider than it is tall if you want, yeah.
And tube stock to put in now?
Really, you can put anything in technically. Just keep in mind, coming into summer, they will need extra water. You know, it's not really raining much anymore. As long as you improve your soil and give them a good drink 2 to 3 times a week, I think you could really plant anything.
Good advice from horticulturalist Matt Barrett speaking to Christine Layton. So, you know, hoping that all of your cottage gardens will survive the summer and that you are moving over to natives.
Yeah, so I've got that hakea Burrandong Beauty in my garden and it's fantastic. It's a prostrate hakea. It has little pink flowers all the way down the stems and it's just prolific when it flowers.
Mm, gorgeous. Okay, let's go to another call. We're talking with Hugh from Leonora. Hello, Hugh.
Hello, Hugh.
Good day. Good.
Yeah. What's your question, Hugh?
Yeah, I sent a photo through. We have this plant that's self-seeded and we have no idea what it is and we don't know whether it's something we should keep or not.
Okay, so you have got a brachychiton and I think it's either, it's probably diversifolia. So brachychiton diversifolia is a native remember the bottle tree plants? It'll grow into a large tree, so you will need to find a spot for it eventually outside. Is that in a pot still?
Yeah, it's still in the pot at the moment. How big would it grow to?
Well, it'll get to a tree eventually in the ground, probably about 6 to 8 metres. But because yours is in the shade a little bit, it's kind of stretched a bit taller and a bit weepy, and it's kind of stretching towards the light. But, yeah, you'll need to, you know, if you want to keep it as a pot plant, you can actually take the tip out and let it bush out. But if you want to put it as a grow as a tree, you need to find a bigger spot in the garden, and it's a very nice tree eventually.
Mm, that's really cool that it's self-seeded. Thanks very much for that call, Hugh. Let's go to Nola in Bunbury. Hi, Nola.
How are you both?
Good.
That's excellent. Now, Mark, I'm growing my own veggies in raised garden beds, and that's very selective, but I've got leeks in, and they're doing well, but I heard somewhere that you need to mound up the soil or something around each one.
Oh, okay. So, you know, you're thinking a bit like potatoes, that you actually do that, but for leeks, you don't really need to do that, so... if you've got a raised veggie garden, it's usually got lots of good stuff in it anyway. And so really you won't need to mound it anymore in that raised veggie garden.
Is that what you do for asparagus too, you mount it?
Well, eventually, because the asparagus growers crowns, if you like, corms, and the crown will get bigger over time. And you would just want to make sure it's well fertilised and the crown will get bigger. Putting soil over the top sometimes encourages more spears to come up, but yeah, with leeks you won't need to do that.
Cool. Okay, a question for Mark. Do I need to let Clivius, is it Clivia or Clivia?
Yes, it depends what
tomato,
side of
tomato.
Correct, yeah.
Do I need to let Clivia seeds dry on the plant before I plant them, says June in Yelling Up?
No, I would actually wait till they go fully brown and then harvest, take those off, and then you'll need to dry them further in a paper bag. So the flowers and the seeds will be like a big kind of knuckle on the plant. Cut the leaf off right at the base and then remove the seeds as well and then let them dry further in like a paper bag.
I've never thought of doing that. I've got clivias, but they you know, sow themselves, don't they? You're always getting children from the plant, so you never need to do it because they just keep on going.
They just do it themselves, and also they kind of divide as a clump as well.
Yeah.
So that's another easy way to propagate them.
Brilliant plant.
Without waiting around, because, you know, if you divide them, you get flowers quicker. them from seed.
Okay, Kerry and Margaret River says, hello, Mark, gardening guru. Oh. I have a 30-year-old weeping cherry tree. It's looking very poorly, although it's always been well cared for. Can you remove the top graft and revert it to a regular cherry tree from the rootstock? It's started sprouting shoots from the rootstock.
Okay, so Margaret River would be a good place to grow a weeping cherry or any type of cherry because it's a bit cooler down there. But, the fact that it's actually shooting from the rootstock indicates that the tree is poorly. You know, when trees start to decline, the rootstocks tend to shoot and take over. And, yes, you can rework a cherry tree like that. I'm probably not that clever to be able to advise you, but that's what a lot of the, orchardists do. You know, if they want to change their, varieties of apples, they just take out the top one, regraft the bottom ones, and then they get new row of apples in or new cherries and things like that. So it can be done. And, it's just a shame the weeping one is deteriorating. So,
you're with Geraldine Millett, Mark Tuchek on Roots and Shoots, and it's 20 minutes to 10, and we've got a whole load of texts and not as many calls. So, again, if you want to get through, and people did respond last time, so we had a rush on them, but there's a bit of a space at the moment, 1-300-222-720, and let's talk to Tricia from Hovia. Hi, Tricia.
Hey, good morning. I just wanted to... Hi. Good morning.
Yep. Hello, hi, Tricia. We're listening.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to ask, so I'm up in Hovia and the... something's echoing back. There's signage on the hill coming up to say that we can't get plants or anything up the trees because of the shot hole borer. So my question is, are people allowed to go to the green shed and buy plants, or is that a no-no because you can't bring them up the hill?
No, you're still welcome to do that. It kind of covers trees with a certain diameter in their trunk. But what they've done is they've increased the quarantine zone. So here's something I prepared earlier.
Yes, I'm very impressed.
Oh, no. Yeah. There we go. And so... what they've done recently, so Hovia is now in like a management zone, and they've extended the zone. They've changed because polyphagous shot hole borer, they can't control it, and they're even trying to just kind of manage it now. So they've given up on eradicating it and trying to manage it. So yes, you can still buy plants from one zone and move it up the hills that way. It's really taking bigger infected material and also anything that's kind of been mulched as well too. So you don't want to be moving mulching through different areas, and mulching companies are well aware of the kind of zoning on it now too.
So. I must say I was very impressed. Two of our ABC staff, Kaysen and Ash, recently went to a Halloween celebration and they dressed as shot hole borers.
Oh, really?
I thought that was superb. I mean, they are a nightmare. It was really, really inventive.
It's funny and sad at the same time.
Right? So, it is. It absolutely is. Let's talk to Murray from Shelley. Hi, Murray. Hello, hi. Murray.
Hi.
Good.
I just have a grass tree which is going the fronds on it are going a sort of a bit of an orange, and the actual greenery of it is fading, shall we like say. So I'm just wondering if that's too much water or if it's just on its last legs.
Okay. Was this a grass tree existing, or you bought it in and it was planted?
No, I've bought it in and it's been planted.
Yeah. And how long ago was that, Murray?
About 2 years ago.
Okay. No, that doesn't sound good. So have you noticed anything like in the crown itself? Are the leaves still firm where at the top of the plant where they emerge?
Yeah, they are. They're reasonably solid. I mean, they don't just fall out or anything. But and the sort of the crown of it's still reasonably intact, and it's just it's green in the core of it, but the sort of the surrounding fronds, if you like, are sort of going a bit orange.
So, okay.
Well, going reasonably orange. So I'm yeah. just wondering how long has it got?
Well, it could be. If it was transplanted after 2 years, I would have thought it should show signs of starting to recover and grow actively. I would actually add a slow release fertilizer to the base of the plant. And does it get extra water there, or?
Well, I give it a reasonable water about once a week.
Once a week is fine. Do you hand water it yourself, or is it on reticulation?
No, just a drip.
Drip?
I just let it drip. I just put the hose on it and let it drip.
Okay.
Oh, drip as in very slow
yeah.
watering.
Yeah.
So usually about 6 to 8 hours sort of thing.
Oh, okay. Well, that's plenty. And if anything, I would probably kind of ease that back a bit. A wetting agent's very effective. If you use a slow-release fertilizer, that will hopefully increase the plant's vigor in order to combat, you know, sometimes they get rust as well. And but usually that's within the crown itself. So there are some granular. If you're finding there's lots of bugs actually in the crown too, that's an issue. And you can use like a granular insecticide in there to stop that happening, because otherwise once that crown dies, that's the end of it.
Okay, thanks for your question, Murray. There was another question actually from Lisa from Rivervale on grass trees, and she just says, it looks unhappy and has white marks on its leaves. My husband thinks it needs more water. I think, if anything, it's had too much. So she was looking for a bit of guidance as well.
Yeah, it's one of those things. So when you transplant a grass tree or a bauga, they do need extra watering in order for their roots to recover. And it's a slow process too. You know, they're very slow growing. So, you know, you don't know if you've got a good grass tree until after a year or two, like previously. So if it's, you don't be wanting to water any existing plants because they've done their own thing and they've survived quite easily, but it's certainly plants that have been transplanted that you do need to water.
On the Clivia clivia debate,
yep.
We had a note from Eve in Jandakot who said, hi, Mark and Geraldine, Clivias were named for Mrs. Clive, so they are pronounced Clivia.
Oh.
I don't know who Mrs. Clive was or who Mr. Clive was.
She's obviously very famous. I didn't know that story either. There you go.
Me neither. Okay, you learn something all the time on Roots and Shoots. We're talking to Chris from North Perth next. Hello, Chris.
Good morning.
Yes, hi, Chris. Sorry, I'll just say this to everybody. When we introduce you, just go straight ahead with your question, because sometimes okay. I think you think we're not here, but we're
no
listening.
Worries.
Yep.
Sure. Okay. I have a magnolia tree that's been around for about 2 years, trying to grow and do well. It's got a tiny orange bug on it that keeps destroying the leaves. And they're going mouldy and dark.
Oh, okay.
And I've tried pesticides a little bit because I don't like them, but nothing's getting rid of this bug.
And this magnolia's in the ground?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Generally, magnolias prefer a fairly enriched soil, and they like it slightly acidic too. So. But they kind of struggle on our coastal sandy plains a bit. And if they've been planted wrong in the first place and either planted too deeply or they're struggling, then they're more prone to pest and disease attack. So I would suggest maybe looking at why the plant's struggling in the first place, because, you know, most plants can tolerate a bit of pest attack. If you're healthy, you know, like anything.
Yeah, your immune system will cope.
Yeah, if you exercise and you eat well, then you catch a cold and you get rid of it. But if you're, you know,
if you're compromised,
a smoker and a drinker, and you know, that, you know, it takes longer. But the same thing for plants too. So I would look at, with magnolias, they like to be fertilised. They like an acidic soil, slightly acidic soil. So use an acidic type fertiliser. Make sure there's no mulch or anything like that up against the stem. And if you can increase the plant's own vigour, then any pesticide that you do use should be able to control them, and that's it.
Cool. Good luck with that, Chris. Question back on grass trees. Regrass trees, says Mary. Is there anywhere to report a grass tree on a verge being disturbed by house builders?
Oh, okay. I guess you'd have to contact your local shire, because now they, most places consider street trees, verge trees, you know, they need to be protected when there's new developments going on. And you see them roping them off, well, fencing them off. And that should be the case for grass trees too, because they're very valuable. So I would inquire with your local, you know, garden team at the local government. So,
We're talking to Di from Hillary's now. Hello, Di.
I'm just want to ask Mark about whether he thinks it's wise to go to the Greens recycling place to get your mulch. I'm not sure if that's a shot hole borer issue or if they actually do stuff to make sure that it's free of it.
That's a good point.
Yeah. So when councils now, if they, you know, because they're cracking down on this, when they do get green waste and it's composted, then there's no chance of it to actually. That's why they've had to, blitz up all these trees in the first place, because that destroys their, you know, conditions that they like to thrive in. So composted green waste and composted mulch would be fine, and there's no issue with that there. It's really when they're transporting freshly blitzed up material.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. So it's still live. Okay. Yeah.
And also, can I just ask another real quickie? I've got thriving fig trees. They're going gangbusters like they do every year. When I put slow-release fertiliser on, how long does that last? Because they just produce truckloads of figs, how often would I need to put slow-release on? I already have.
Yes. You can get different time release. So most of them are kind of 8 to 9 months. So if you do it now, it'll last you during the growing season. So you just do it once now, this time of the year in spring, and then they're good to go.
Good on you, Di.
That's all, even for the truckloads of figs. Okay, thanks very much.
Great. Thanks, Di. So Craig from Coolin has sent us a photo. Let's have a little look, and I'll talk to him. We'll talk to him as well. Hi, Craig. How are you doing?
Yeah, g'day. How's it going?
Good.
I've got that. I think it's a grevillea. I'm not sure. I'm not one of the families, but I've got to chop at the top of it because it's underneath the power line. But I'm just wondering, if I chop it, I'll chop all the edge bits off, but then if I just lop it at a certain height, how will it grow up from there, that chopped off bit?
Okay, so you've got a grevillea robusta. It's an Eastern States grevillea, a tree grevillea. Fantastic plants when they flower, lovely big orange flowers this time of the year. And they tend to grow in a pyramidal type shape. So when you lop out the top, it kind of will wreck the shape, but you'll find so it'll recover. They will send out new shoots. But if you have to lop it because of the power lines, then, yeah, certainly do that. But it's worth keeping. But it will certainly just keep going if you don't do anything, you know, to the top of that tree.
Back on Clivia's Clivias, and Richard Harlow from Albany says, "Hi, Geraldine, Mark. No matter what Mrs. Clive was called, Clivia rhymes with Trivia and Olivia." Oh, we've got a bit of a difference.
It does. There's different sides of the fence here.
You've got to pick your side. Yeah. We're talking to Alex in Albany now. Hello, Alex.
Yeah, hi, guys. How you doing?
Good.
I've got a question about English willow trees. We love cricket, and I'm actually driving up to watch the Ashes now, and my son broke his cricket bat, so we're going to a cricket bat store to buy one. I had a bit of an interest in planting my own English willow trees on our property down in Albany, but when looking into it, we found that they were not allowed in Western Australia, except they are in New South Wales and Victoria. And I was just wondering if you thought that was like a financially driven decision, or is it a, sort of like protect the waterways type thing if they get away? And why do you reckon they let some species of willow in and not others?
Yes, yeah. I think the English willow belongs to the Salix family. So, you know, those big weeping willows that you get.
Mm. We had one when I was a kid. I used to spend half my time up there reading and whatever.
Yeah, so the Salix family can be quite invasive. And so I really don't know the species of the English willow cricket bat one that they use, but I'd say it's more the fact that it can become weedy. Some of them become they're actually hosts for things like, you know, polyphagous shot hole borer and stuff like that. Yeah, okay. So we want to deter planting tree hosts and plant other trees in the expense. Yeah, so
okay.
Could be the reason. Don't know.
All right, thanks, Alex. And a question about shot hole borer. Do landscape suppliers selling wood chips, are they obligated to treat it for borer?
No, because it'll come from their source. So the landscape suppliers would be getting it from an initial source, and they're usually accredited and things like that too. So they usually buy it through accredited agencies, so you won't have any issue buying it from a landscaping yard.
5 minutes to 10 on Roots and Shoots, so just a little bit of time left with Mark Tuchek and his enormous knowledge. Let's talk to Louise from Inglewood. Hello, Louise.
Hello, Jerry. I'm just ringing to say that I have this beautiful poster at home, and it's the Noongar Nation Six Seasons. And within it, it's got all the flowering plants of Western Australia and the Noongar Nation. And it actually labels the grass tree as a balga.
Mm.
That's my little campaign I've been running for some years now to try and get the grass tree commonly called a balga instead of its European name of a grass tree. Because we're in the Noongar Nation and we should be calling these plants balgas.
We should. Yep.
Yep. And just remind me, what Noongar season are we in at the moment?
I've no idea.
Oh.
I'd have to consult my poster.
Oh, right. Thought it was in front of you.
Camberang.
So. Camberang, is it? Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough, Louise, and a really good point there too. Okay, let's get to a couple of texts. Hi, guys. How much can I cut back a bottle brush once it's flowered?
As a general rule for most plants, you'd probably want to take no more than a third of the growth. Bottle brushes are very forgiving when you do prune them because they will shoot from dead wood. A lot of plants don't. But as a rule, probably a third. If you have to take any more off, take a third off to begin with, let it shoot, and then once it started to shoot from lower down, then you can reduce it a bit further.
We're going back to a question that someone brought to Sabrina a few weeks ago. She says, she sent a photo in of a tree that is not looking good. I'm hoping someone can dive deeper into this issue, as I'm not sure caterpillars are eating these, as there are only certain grevilleas amongst the rest that are slowly dying off. New photos showing dead section and amongst it some good growth.
Ah, okay. Is there any more photos or just the one?
I think there's just the one.
Oh,
yep.
Okay. So that grevillea is Grevillea oliveacea, which are pretty tough plants normally. And if it's dying off in sections, again, I'd say it's more like a root problem. So there's something going on at root level to cause, you know, branches like that to die off. So there's, you know, some problem with the sap flow up the tree. Either it's, you know, you've got some ant nests in there that have destroying some of the roots or building up soil against the trunk. So generally they're pretty tough and forgiving, but unless they've done some earthworks there, sure.
I reckon we've got time for one more question, and this one is from James in Huntingdale, who sent in a photo as well. Hi, my banksia looks really healthy except for this on the foliage. Can you describe this?
Yes, well, again, it's got a fungal disease like rust, which is usually like overhead watering for extended periods, or whether that's actually just in, you know, it might not be getting enough sun. Where it is, it's hard to say. It's certainly seen a picture of it, but the conditions that it's growing in. So, again, there wouldn't be any sprays I'd be using for something like this, but it could be just a cultural issue. It's getting too much of something, you know, too much water, too much shade, too much of something it doesn't like.
Okay. All right. Thank you for all your questions and your photos and your calls today. You are the heart of Root and Shoots, and Mark Tuchek, like Sabrina, you have the most amazing I don't know how you deal with half the things because you seem to know every single one, but thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Geraldine.
So that's all for Saturday Breakfast. Amber is back with you next Saturday after a bit of a holiday. Of course, we have sport coming up next. I wish you all the best with the cricket. I know it's a difficult day for you, but hopefully it's going to get a whole lot better. We're coming up to news shortly.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.